needed, and you know, once alcohol was involved, things got really colorful really quick. And that whole, you know, everything that I had learned at Sunday school, at church, anything faith-based was just completely out the window. I just wanted no part of it. I just bring that up because I know a lot of us, you know, have similar experiences and similar backgrounds with that. You know, fortunately for us today, you know, AA has nothing to do with any type of religion, you know, and I'm grateful for that. When I first got to AA at 24, you know, just looking at the shades in the meetings where the steps and traditions are, you know, kind of outlined, the principles of the steps and traditions are outlined. You know, you see a lot about, you know, as God as I understand him, and, you know, prayer and meditation was kind of like areas that I really just didn't want to dive into those areas. Any idea or concept of a God was, you know, really had a negative notion to it, you know. I felt like, you know, at that time before actually reviewing my inventory and seeing the roles I played and everything, just I played the victim. I felt like the cards that I was dealt was an unfair hand. And, you know, so, and I use that to my advantage in a lot of ways growing up. But so fortunately for me, I didn't have like a whole lot of experience in AA early on without being introduced to this work. I know that's, you know, can be kind of common around the big book step study. But that just wasn't me. And, I was introduced to the work early on. I was a week, out of treatment in a, you know, men's recovery house in Plymouth. And, you know, guy approached me and, you know, he basically, outlined what his role was going to be. I don't even think I uttered the words, "Will you sponsor me?" He just kind of took me and guided me along this, this journey. And, you know, so early on in the step process, just in the early, even in the earlier chapters and in the earlier readings, my exposure to prayer was very simple. You know, we would go to his house, we'd sit on the couch and we'd, crack open the book. And, you know, the first few readings that we went through in the, you know, first, you know, 63 there and the doctor's opinion, he would just ask me if I would join in and say the serenity prayer with him, just something really simple, very common in the halls. And I'd been to plenty of meetings before where I'd heard it. So I could, you know, just follow right along or reiterate, what was being said. And, that worked for, that period of time. And then as we started to get a little bit deeper into the earlier readings and really got an idea of what my problem was, you know, with alcohol and the fact that I was powerless, you know, it was pretty evident to me that if you're powerless, you know, the solution is a power greater than yourself. And so, and being powerless didn't mean that I was weak or cowardly or any of that stuff, which I thought it did mean that. I lived the last 4 years on the streets. I was in and out of Mainspring shelter. And so I really had this, this tough guy image and, you know, I was really kind of hardened. So, it wasn't until actually looking it up, understanding that the word powerless means the lack of resources. So for me as an alcoholic, I lacked the resources within myself, to rise above my alcoholism and my drinking. So steps one and steps two were really, you know, kind of conclusion steps, that I had to come to terms with. And I, fully, you know, bought into it. And again, you know, meeting with this gentleman on a regular basis certainly helped. I could kind of see this working in his life, and, you know, he had the glowing eyes and, you know, he was very grounded. And so I just followed in his footsteps. And as we, expanded on the work, that simple serenity prayer turned into, you know, why don't we just, you know, two guys just hold hands and, you know, say a prayer together. Sometimes you just ad lib. Sometimes it was just from the heart. Sometimes we would read a passage out of a, you know, a prayer book or something to that effect, some AA literature or something like that. And eventually that led up to, you know, making that decision in the third step. That was just a little background of, you know, my initial exposure to prayer and AA after having, you know, kind of a really negative association with God growing up. I mean, we'd go to church and then I'd come home and my dad would, like, you know, throw one of us through the window. So it's like, you know, it didn't really make a whole lot of sense what was going on. It was like, on one hand, you're, you know, supposed to be getting lifted up and, you know, listening to these sermons and all these great things. And on the other hand, you're getting, you know, pile drived and, you know, that just is what it is, you know? So, but needless to say, like, as we get into the reading tonight, you know, fortunately with good guidance, you know, I mean, I was a high school dropout. And, so looking at a lot of the stuff that's, you know, in this book and a lot of the language that was used early on in the, you know, late 1930s was, you know, very definitely far beyond my vocabulary, you know? You know, I basically knew I self and me, and that was about it. So it was important that I, you know, kind of looked up words and tried to put into context what they meant in this book and try to relate that to myself. And so I looked up the words, both prayer and meditation. They're still in my books. It's falling apart here, but the word prayer, the definition that I found that worked for me, it was suggested to use an Oxford Unabridged dictionary, but when I was in the Anchor House, the Scrabble dictionary was the best I could come up with. So I actually had to go back and make an amends because I stole it. But the Scrabble dictionary worked back then. Real simple, a solemn request for help or an expression of an earnest hope or wish. So a solemn request for help. Really, you know, as you go through this reading here tonight, me and my experience, you know, anytime it says, you know, we ask, that generally to me means that, you know, we're praying, we're asking for something. You know, early on it was, you know, get on your knees and ask for help, you know, have God keep you away from a drink or, you know, whatever other hors d'oeuvres, you know, are in play there. And that worked for the time being. I'm not sure if that would still work today. I don't know. That's not my experience. It's, you know, today I had to expand upon that. I don't think that if I really just kind of stayed status quo or, you know, didn't grow, with this, where I would be. So, you know, my prayer life looks a lot different than that today. Has a lot more meaning to it. It has a lot more, you know, backbone to it. You know, I usually try to start my day a little bit earlier, you know, than I normally would if I was just rolling out of bed and you know, hitting the shower and going to work. I set my alarm for about a half hour earlier than I'm supposed to get up. And, you know, sometimes I'm hit the snooze a couple of times, but other times I'm, you know, up and at them. And I got a couple of books that I read. You know, one is, you know, a serial. It's a couple of reflections. And another one is actually a book that I won't mention it because it's not a conference approved literature, but just a book that Bill Wilson and Lois were reading. It was a devotional book that they were reading. And I found that to be really helpful. I don't subscribe to any you know, religious denomination today. I'm really an open spirit. I'll participate in just about anything. You know, a few years back, I moved my mom in with me. And, you know, my dad passed earlier on and my mom's been alone for a long time. And so, you know, I participate when she, you know, does a blessing around meals. I feel like that's important. I go to church with her. But I'll also go to, you know, a Buddhist temple and meditate there, you know, or I'll attend, you know, a yoga class and, you know, just kind of focus on my breath there. So there's many different avenues to, you know, spirituality and prayer and meditation. And that's just, you know, where I found myself to be in this day and age at, you know, 14 years into this. So, you know, meditation, the definition I got for that was just real simple, is silent contemplation. You know, and really that's what it is for me today. You know, as an alcoholic, you know, where the illness centers in the mind, it's, you know, really, what does it tell us early on? That it's the crux of the problem, right? Crux meaning issue needing immediate resolution. So I've always got to keep my mind right. So quieting it and, you know, really just kind of accepting thoughts for what they are as they come in, and watching them come in and go out, and focusing on the breath is so important for me. Even more so today with everything that's going on in the world, I just find myself just wanting to sit silently and, you know, block out all the noise, and just get centered, so that I can, you know, be of fit maximum usefulness to others, and, you know, coming home to my mom who's almost 80 years old. So, you know, just so useful and, great tools, and I'm so glad that, you know, we have this, you know, for us. A couple other things that I just mentioned here is that, you know, there's a series of questions in here. You know, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? You know, I've been at different points in my sobriety where I've, you know, basically memorize those questions. So I would just sit and I would just, you know, go through the questions, and it was kind of like my catch basin at the end of the day. If, you know, I acted in a way that I wasn't supposed to, or I didn't review a resentment on spot like I should have, it really just acted like a catch basin, or does act like a catch basin for me to, you know, go to sleep without holding on to anything, or, you know, just prepare myself for the next day, really. But I've gone through those questions both just kind of in my head, sitting down quietly, reviewing them, but I've also written them out. And I think both are really useful. You know, I always find writing things out is just a great way to see them for what they are on paper. You know, and it also, you know, gives me a little bit of evidence that, you know, this is in fact me on paper. So it's a good resource, and I can certainly share that with my sponsor or somebody, you know, some of the guys that I'm close with in this area in Plymouth. So, but those questions are really, you know, important to go through. Do we owe an apology? You know, more often than not, I you know, I find myself in a situation where I don't necessarily owe an apology, but I definitely, you know, owe it to somebody to address my behavior. Whatever it is, you know, in my case, you know, one of my biggest defects is, I tend to use my humor, in a way that sometimes isn't, you know, the best. You know, I oftentimes have to look at that and think to myself, you know, was I cracking a joke that really just wasn't appropriate at the time, or something to that effect. And, you know, usually it's, you know, you got to correct that. You can't do that. I work for an all girls, Roman Catholic school. High school. So, you know, I could really get myself into trouble if I don't, you know, keep myself in line, which is also something that I never thought in, you know, my career where I would be, you know. I had the opportunity to get to work early, and if the commute's rough, I could step into the chapel and just, you know, take 5 or 10 minutes and just get centered before I go about my day. The other interesting thing is during, you know, administrative meetings and stuff, like, they'll start off with a prayer, which is like, I can't even believe this is my life. Like, who knew that it was going to be so interconnected? But that's just where sobriety brought me and where life brought me. You know, really grateful for that. But I think one of the last things I'll probably say is, you know, it says that it works if our attitude is, you know, in the right space, you know. I don't look at this as a chore or, you know, anything like that. I just, this is something that I really enjoy doing. You know, sometimes it's not easy to sit with self and reflect on things, but over time I've, you know, might have started off with you know, 5 minutes of just sitting with self and concentrating on breath and, you know, asking God for a little bit of guidance. And over the years, it's turned to, you know, half hour, hour. You know, I'm not doing that every day by any means, but, you know, it's there. I really enjoy it. It's just, you know, it's allowed me to really just tap into the resources, you know, to rise above my alcoholism. You know, alcoholism demands treatment. It's going to get it one way or the other, through a drink or through a higher power. And for me, I'm, you know, I'm in line with a higher power and try to keep that static, or anything, you know, in the way of me and God. I just try to keep all that stuff removed and out of the way. So, I heard a guy years ago who said that, you know, a clear conscience is the softest pillow, you know, so, pretty good to be able to, you know, rest your head on your own pillow and feel good about what you're doing and feel comfortable with who you are. And, that's what this step is giving me the ability to do, you know. And if you've heard me before, I often say that it's about practice, and apply. I didn't make that up. I got that from my sponsor. I stole it from him, but it really works if you practice, and apply. So in any case, like I said, you know, my experience is, you know, I get up in the morning a little bit earlier, you know, just try to get right with my alcoholism first and foremost. Do a little bit of reading, you know, ask God for help. I go through a, you know, set of prayers that I have that I like, that I've, you know, kind of extracted over the years. And, you know, and I sit quietly for about 10 minutes before I leave the house. You know, that's ultimately what works for me. And then, you know, when I get home, you know, sometimes I don't wait until, you know, 10 o'clock at night, you know, before I go to bed. Sometimes I just, you know, it could be 6, 7, 8 o'clock. If I'm not going to a meeting or if I'm not going out and I feel like I got some time, I'll spend that, with God then and just kind of review my day and, see what areas I need to improve upon. But, I think it was back in the early pioneering days with the Oxford Group movement that the tenants there that they were, subscribing to, they called this the guidance tenants. And that's where they would go to, you know, go to God and look for guidance. So, you know, I think, we've just changed the language a little bit, but that's ultimately what I do. And, I just love looking across this, this panel here and seeing all these men. This is just unbelievable. It's great. Hopefully we get through this, this craziness that we're all experiencing right now. And, ultimately I feel strongly that it's going to bring us closer together. It's unfortunate that we have to go through it, but, you know, I'm looking forward to the other side and connecting with you guys at some point on a Thursday night. So, John, thanks for your service there, buddy. And DC, thanks for getting in touch with me, man, and connecting me with this platform. So cool. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark.
Fucking awesome.
All right. Where'd you go, Scotty? Where'd my buddy Scott go? All right, Scott, can you...
good evening, recovered uncured alcoholic. John, once again, thank you for organizing this thing. And Dennis also. Mark, thanks for sharing. Good to see you up here, buddy. I'm going to listen tonight.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. Greg?
Thanks, Scott. Hi, I'm Greg, alcoholic.
Hey, Greg.
Thanks for that share, Mark. That was a really great sharing. Identifying with that a lot. So, you know, in this, the prayer and meditation for me, I started reading steps 10 and 11 early around my fourth step somewhere, I think. I can never remember timelines, but it was somewhere around there. And I read it every day since. You know, I miss days, of course, here and there. But when I do miss a day, it's amazing how quickly I backslide. I start going in my direction and not asking for help. You know, it says at the end of this reading, we let God discipline us, and I kind of need some discipline. you know, if I go my way, it's kind of crazy and it's wild. And I end up going to these things. Also, at the end of the reading, it says, this was pointed out to me not too long ago. I've been thinking about it ever since. But oh, it says, we're in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, and worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. You know, danger. These are warnings. These things mess me up, you know. So when I'm running on my own direction, you know, I end up in those places. So when I take that time, you know, and try to talk to God, that's my higher power. That's what I use. You know, it calms me. It makes me think about what I'm doing a little bit. You know, it gives me guidance. It's this inner resource that we tap into. And, you know, the earlier steps leading up to it, and it all got me to that place to rely on God, you know. But now I use it at, you know, every intersection.